Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 116 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all had a fantastic week. I think we had a three-day weekend. I think that was the start of this past week since I last talked to you. Hope you had a good weekend then. Hope you're having a good weekend now. And in a second here, we're going to jump into the standout seven. But first and foremost, I got to make a little bit of a, you know, housekeeping note here off the top, right? So we've been doing this show Saturday afternoons for, I believe this is our fifth season, for 5 years now. And when it started out, I was in college. I had the time, you know, it's a Saturday afternoon. We can make the time. We can always make time for talking some football. And, you know, not everybody gets the opportunity to host a podcast. And it was a thing I'm very proud of, and something that I'm still very proud of, as we're at 116 episodes. Couldn't have seen that one coming, and I don't know if they saw that coming when they brought me on. But the reason I'm bringing this up is I've had some shifts in my schedule in terms of work. Obviously, I'm now a graduate. It's been 5 years. I was graduated a couple years ago, but now I'm in a situation where I might not be able to host the show in this current time slot. I don't know if I'm going to be able to host the show, period. So I will keep you updated here. Obviously, if you've been around a long time, thank you so much. If you've been around for the first time, you're like, whoa, can we get to the football? I get it. Calm down. We're getting there. But just in terms of housekeeping, you know, I don't know if there will be an episode next Saturday afternoon. It might be on Friday. It might be on Sunday. It might be on Thursday night after the Thursday night football game. So scheduling is going to be a little iffy. And we're going to work through this, you know, as I move into my new position elsewhere. But as of now, I do not have any intention of, you know, walking away from the show, especially mid-season. I think that would be kind of rough. And, you know, it's not something I want to do. You don't ever want to walk away from a commitment like that. But unfortunately, due to scheduling conflicts, I might have to shift some things around. So keep an eye on the description of every episode. It usually ends with, talk to you next Saturday afternoon. Usually that is something I can hit, but with my new job, I don't think I'll be able to hit that. So keep an eye out, and then whenever the next episode is, I believe it might be next Saturday afternoon, we'll see. Keep an eye out, obviously, here or wherever you are downloading or listening to the podcast for the next upload, episode 117. So going through that, going through a big transitional period with that, going through some rough stuff personally, with some family health issues. So it's been a rough week. Let's try and distract ourselves a little bit with some football. And at the end of the day, and I've talked about this before, especially when we were undergoing the beginning of the season last year during the pandemic, we're still in the pandemic, but during the meat of the pandemic, if you will, granted, like I said, who knows when it's going to end. It was nice to have sports returning to give us that escape, to give us a little bit of a distraction. And this week, like I said, I try to keep between the lines, but needs to be said, I need a little bit of a distraction. So let's start talking NFL football. Let's jump right in to what might be an abbreviated standout seven. I don't think it will be, but you know, you take up a handful of minutes with a long, drawn-out intro, you might have to cut corners. So let's get right in to the standout seven, and we'll go with just two bigger stories to start this week. Bigger story, the Minnesota Vikings victory at the buzzer, right? Or the New Orleans Saints pulling it together and beating the Washington Footballers in Washington. Now, I'm going to say the Vikings, because, and it's not, look, I get it, they played Detroit, they should win, I understand. However, I will say this. Star running back missed that game. Kind of a big deal. Madison's a darn good player in his own regard, but Dalvin Cook is a step above, in my opinion. Madison should be a starting running back in the NFL relatively soon. As soon as he wants out of there, I imagine, when the contract runs out. But the reason I'm saying Minnesota is simply because of their record. If they would have dropped to 1-4, it would have been a really tough spot to be in if they want to be a playoff team. So they would have been dropping to 1-4. And look, they haven't lost to Schlubs. They lost to the Cardinals by one. They lost to Cleveland. They lost to Cincinnati, who we now see is a pretty good team. But consider this. If they're 1-4, they still have two games left with Green Bay, which could both be losses. They have Carolina this week, which is iffy. They've got the Dallas Cowboys. They've got the Ravens. They've got the Chargers. They've got Pittsburgh, the Rams. We're talking about a team that could be at 1-4 with that upcoming schedule. We could be talking pack it in territory. Especially considering the way the, you know, some of these seasons have shook out for them. Come on. Now, we take a look at New Orleans. It's a big win because Jameis Winston goes out and throws 4 touchdowns, and they win this game on the road. And eventually Mike Thomas is going to be back, and then this week, they're off this week. Next week, they've got a nice little, kind of a cushy situation to fall into out of a bye. It should have been, you know, Saints heading up to Seattle to take on Russell Wilson and the Seahawks in a kind of spooky situation if you're a Saints fan, right? On the road, potentially coming in at 2-3 if they had lost this game. Now, they're coming in at 3-2, and oh, by the way, Russell Wilson and Chris Carson are on IR. You can't lose that game. I'll say that an episode in advance. You can't lose that game. But this puts them certainly in a better position. I felt the need to give them a little bit of a shout-out, but Minnesota might have been pushing towards the flat line if they had dropped to 1-4. I don't think it would have been as dire necessarily. I know New Orleans is in a division with Tampa Bay. I know Carolina's playing well. I get it. I know you could say the Vikings are in an easier division. I understand. But I think if the Vikings drop to 1-4, they are done. The Saints, you still take a look at their schedule. They have yet to play the Atlanta Falcons, which could be 2 W's. They've yet to, so which would push them to 5. They've yet to play Philly, could put them at 6. They've yet to play the New York Jets, could be 7. The Miami Dolphins, could be 8. Could be looking at a wild card contender here. So it's a big win for them, but I give the edge to Minnesota. Next, this one's a little tricky. So, bigger win, and I'm using air quotes here, Mac Jones coming back on the road against an awful Houston Texans team, or Joe Burrow losing to the Green Bay Packers. And, I mean, I would say the obvious answer is Joe Burrow, right? Let's talk about Mac first, because we brought him up first. So, Mac Jones goes for 230 in this game. Nothing crazy on the ground from the stable of running backs. Nice game for Hunter Henry in the receiving core. I mean, on the Texans side, Davis Mills goes for 312 and 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. What? What? How? And this is a Patriots team that just traded Stephon Gilmore, who was in the running for Defensive Player of the Year years prior. We haven't even started talking about the obvious contextual things here, but for that reason, it's got to be the Bengals. And I understand it's a loss, right? Team goes to 3-2. Tough division. Super tough. The Ravens are playing darn good football. The Browns just lost a thriller. Pittsburgh still got a pulse. The reason I say it's Cincinnati, and at Cincinnati, I really mean Joe Burrow, because it's really a QB-centered question here. Bigger deal that Mac Jones got a win, or that Joe Burrow almost got a win? Well, Joey B goes for 280, 2 picks in this one. One of them pretty bad, I believe. It might have been both of them. Ja'Marr Chase looks phenomenal. 150 yards receiving and a touchdown. T. Higgins pitching in, Tyler Boyd pitching in. I kind of like their skill position group. I'm not super sold on Uzoma and the tight end cluster. Everybody loves Joe Mixon. Character issues we'll talk about later. Not particularly Joe Mixon, but we'll talk. We talked about Urban Meyer last week. We'll touch on Gruden this week, because I don't want this to become a thing that we do every week. Because trust me, you could do it every week if you wanted to with the National Football League. That's not why we're here. We're here to talk about Between the Lines, and that's why we try and keep it to. That might have been a better name for the podcast. Let me know what you guys think in the comments, if there is a comments section, or on social media, all social media, at Nick Donatic, N-I-K, DONADIC. Let me know. Would that be a better name? I mean, we're 100 plus deep here. Between the Lines podcast. That's not bad. Kind of sends the message I was going for, you know? Plus, I know Necessary Roughness became another thing. I mean, I kind of didn't ape it off of the obvious from The Penalty, but there was a television show named Necessary Roughness. That was a pretty good show, you know? Obviously, we don't have any ad reads in here. At least, if we're doing ad reads, I haven't gotten them. So, we don't have to worry about trademark shenanigans, but Between the Lines might have been better. Might have been better. A little too late to retroactively change the name. Maybe that'll be the next podcast. But either way, back to the point at hand. A lot of digressions in the opening of this week's episode. The answer is Joe Burrow, because if it were not for a litany of kicker issues from either team, Joey B and the Bengals could have won this game. We're talking Mason Crosby going down and missing a game winner. Mason Crosby going down and missing a game winner. We're talking McPherson hitting the, I believe he hit the upright, and then he hit the flag. I have never in my life seen a kicker hit the flag waving off of the end of the goalpost. Never. Ever. Not a singular time. I find it exhilarating. It's tremendous that I have now seen it, and I'm of the opinion, I've had this conversation with my father watching football games. He always joked around that if you hit the upright, it should be worth more points than if you got it between the uprights, because it is harder to do. Well, if you hit the flag, by golly, just count it as a good kick, because you couldn't have done it on purpose. It was tremendous. Either way, this Bengals team is a legitimate, right now, the way they look, you know, health withstanding. Hopefully Joey B's all right and they go out there and they stay healthy and Ja'Marr Chase continues to have a great year. Health withstanding, this Bengals team has taken me by surprise. I thought they might have a shot to be, you know, pretty good, win, what, 6 games, maybe. This team's 3-2. You take a look at some of the games they have coming up. They've got Detroit this week. We could be talking 4 wins. They've got the Jets, could be talking 5 wins. They've got the Raiders, who now don't have a head coach. Who knows how their season's going to go? Could spiral, right? We could be looking 6 wins. They've got Pittsburgh on the 28th of November. Not outside the question. They already beat them once. This one's in Cincy. Could be 7 wins. Who knows what the quarterback situation for San Francisco is going to look like? Could be talking 8 wins. Denver? Could be talking 9. You know, Baltimore in week 16, how much do they have to play for? I'm not saying they're going to run away with anything, but it's possible. It's certainly possible. We've seen teams run away from the pack in a matter of 10 weeks, you know? So maybe. And they end the season at Cleveland. They've got a fighting shot here. This was huge. And if anything more, even if they miss the playoffs, they wind up going 5-12. You know what I mean? It showed the fans, hey, this guy can get it done. 2 picks, whatever. This guy took us down the field and put us in position to win the game against a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. Now, you might say, hold the phone here, Nick. He also put his team in position. Ah, we don't got to worry about that. One guy can't win the game if the other guy wins the game. So, clearly there were some mishaps on both sides, but I think you walk away relatively happy if you're a Bengal fan. And I think that's a bigger W than New England going to 2-3 when their defense gets torched by Davis Mills. Number 3 in the standout 7. We're not going to do a bigger story here. This just has to be talked about. We cut the third bigger story. We have to talk about Chargers-Browns. 41 points combined scored in the fourth quarter. Going into the fourth, it is 27-21 Browns. As you may well know by now, I assume, they walk out of this one losing 47-42. Baker Mayfield goes for 305 and 2 touchdowns. Nick Chubb rushes for 160. Kareem Hunt goes for 60 of his own. They combine for 3 touchdowns on the ground. David Njoku has a massive breakaway touchdown, at which the beginning you see a coach on the Chargers sideline screaming at members of the secondary, which leads me to believe the touchdown was inevitable since he was unable to communicate. with the members of the secondary necessary to coordinate them to defend David Njoku properly. We're not going to get into the fact that Odell Beckham had two catches for 20 yards in a massive shootout game. On the other side, 66 yards on the ground for Austin Ekeler. He pitched in 53 in the receiving game as well, three touchdowns. Herbie goes for 398 and four touchdowns. Mike Williams continues his amazing play. I've always thought Mike Williams was a darn good player. I didn't think it was a, you know, can he piece it together sort of thing. The talent has always been there. I think it's a stay on the field sort of thing. We've seen a couple of drops here and there as well over the years, but darn good player, and it's nice to see him really exploding in terms of his production this year, because that makes this team scary. Man, no bones about it. If he was not producing like he is right now, this team would not be 4-1. Herbert's a great player. We know it. We love it. We've been talking about it for a year and a half now. Austin Ekeler, pretty good back. Keenan Allen, pretty good wideout, right? We get it. Donald Parham can contribute, you know what I mean? Jared Cook, still got a little bit left in him. But without Mike Williams really helping push this offense to the next level, this team would not be 4-1. I don't think that's a hot take. So why do I bring this up? Well, might be the best game we see all season. It had shades of that old Rams-Chiefs game. I believe that was in, don't remember where they played that game. I think it was supposed to be in Mexico City. Might have been relocated. However, shades of that from a few years ago when the Rams obviously represented the NFC in the Super Bowl. And everybody was rooting for them to take on the Chiefs, but obviously Brady got the ball and blah, 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 blah. You know how it ended. So one of the reasons I bring this up is that. Another is, I saw this comment from Bart Scott, and Bart has said that it might have been out of context. I don't really care. I don't. Baker Mayfield. He is the most replaceable quarterback in football. Nobody does less with more than Baker Mayfield on GetUp ESPN. What? Like, can I get a Steve Austin level what in here? Like, what are you talking about? You're telling me you, a former Pro Bowl, I believe Pro Bowl, middle linebacker, they scored 42. They scored 40. Did you check the score? They scored 42. Hello? Is this thing on? Let's take a look at the other game they lost to the defending AFC champion Chiefs, 33-29. 33-29. We're not talking exemplary defensive performances here. You want to talk, all right, you want to bring this up, and perhaps this was brought up more after this game that I'm going to reference, the Vikings game. They had just played the week before, 14-7, ugly game. Baker goes for a 150, right? They run the ball pretty well, but there's not really anything out of the receiving core that game, nothing in the passing game. Kirk goes for 200 on the other side, you know. They stopped the run pretty well. All right, you know, kudos. But if you give up 47 and 26 of those points are in the fourth quarter, why are we bashing the quarterback? Look, Bart Scott probably, they love to use this saying, right? He's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. It's probably true, might be. But last time I checked, when you give up 26 and a quarter, I probably am not pointing the finger at the quarterback of the football team. Maybe. Maybe through three pick sixes. Oh, he didn't throw a single interception. Okay. Maybe. Maybe it was constant overthrows that led to the fact they were always in bad field position. And no, I don't think so. I think they just got beat by a better team. It feels unnecessary to throw that criticism on Baker Mayfield after a game like this. That's just my take, and I'm not, you know me, if you've been around, if you haven't, I'll fill you in. I'm not a huge Baker Mayfield guy. I was out of college, I liked the confidence, I liked the bravado, so to speak. But then, for some reason, he was being a weirdo and taking shots at the Giants. The Giants suck. There's no need to take those shots. I mean, trying to endear yourself to your star wideout, who, by the way, just hasn't really panned out, if we're being honest. The addition of Odell Beckham. We can talk about this another time, but if we look legitimately at how that trade worked out, I honestly don't think it was really that big of a W for the Browns, if it was a W at all. I mean, you take a look. Last year, he plays in 7 games, 20 grabs. 19, he has 74 grabs. He has yet to reach, you know, that 74 grab season is the worst full season of his career. His last year with the Giants, he played 12 games and he had 77 catches for 1,050 yards and 6 touchdowns. His first 3 years, 1,300, 1,450, 1,367 in terms of yardage, 12 touchdowns, 13 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns. It just hasn't panned out in Cleveland. I'm not going to go on this rant here ripping Odell Beckham. Like I said, maybe we'll approach this in another week when there's less going on. But I had to bring up the Bart Scott thing because it was bizarro world to me. You lose a shootout. Okay. It's the quarterback's fault? Well, you should have made more plays, son. I mean, 300 yards and 2 touchdowns? You guys ran for 220? It's not the offense. It wasn't the offense. It was the defense. You gave up 400 passing yards. It was the defense. Speaking of defense, keeping my tone, number 4 in standout 7, let's talk Kansas City. So we usually talk primetime games in number 5 around there. We'll jump one of them to the front of the line here and have them be their own thing. So let's talk Kansas City. What's the problem with the Kansas City Chiefs? First of all, huge kudos to the Buffalo Bills. I talked about going into that game, I thought Kansas City would really have a chance to say, look, we've been struggling, but, you know, both of these losses we have, yeah, you know, a fumble late, we could have beat the Ravens, you know. We didn't take the Chargers serious enough, but now we got the Bills. Ah, okay. Well, apparently they didn't take the Bills serious enough either. Because Josh Allen goes for 365 combined yards, 374, excuse me. 4 touchdowns, including a rushing touchdown. Dawson Knox, 3 grabs for a 117. Emmanuel Sanders continues to contribute with 2 touchdowns of his own. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. And I am going to take this game by game. So, a lot is being heaped on my boy, and I will admit there is a little bit of a bias here, as there is with every commentator on every topic, if we're being honest. Otherwise, you wouldn't have an opinion. Otherwise, you wouldn't care enough to say something. So, I like Steve Spagnuolo. I do. Steve Spagnuolo helped bring championships to the New York Football Giants. I've said over and over again, I'm from the New York area, born and raised here, still live here. So they're heaping the blame on him for the team's performance because they're giving up points. They are giving up points. It's a fair point. You know, is that a pun? Wasn't intended. So let's talk about why Kansas City's losing. Kansas City at Baltimore. Does anyone blame Kansas City's defense for this loss? Raise your hand. Raise your hand. No. No, it's not their fault. They intercepted Lamar Jackson twice in this game, trying to offset the fact that Patrick Mahomes threw a pick of his own, and then Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumbled the game away as the game ended. A game where you force 2 turnovers from Lamar Jackson is not a bad game. It's not. A game where your running back fumbles the game away and your quarterback tries to be Superman when you have your foot on the throat of the other team and throws a pick, not on the defense. It's not. Let's go to the next one. Against the LA Superchargers, right? Okay, so is this one on the defense? Justin Herbert, 4 touchdowns, no picks. He played great. He really did. How about the fact that Tyreek Hill fumbled, Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumbled again, and Patrick Mahomes threw 2 interceptions? So you turn the ball over 4 times, 4 times, against a Charger team that you know is gunning for you. You poked the bear in the offseason when you said, well, I'll see it when I believe it, and, you know, botched it. When somebody told Patrick Mahomes at, I believe it was a golf event, Herbert's coming for you this year, he came for you. 4 touchdowns on your turf. 2 picks. 2 fumbles lost. In a game that you lose by 6. This team is still fantastic, by the way. I know. Right now, they're sitting at 2-3. Let's talk about the loss to Buffalo, as I alluded to. We're not talking really insane numbers from Josh Allen. 315, three touchdowns, not a bad game. Definitely a good game, right? They didn't force any turnovers. Patrick Mahomes turns the ball over three times in this game, one being a fumble, and Byron Pringle fumbles in this game. Can we get some stick'em at Arrowhead Stadium? Can we get some better gloves? Just hold on to the ball. If this was Bill Belichick's team, he would have had an aneurysm by now. The amount of fumbles costing them possessions, costing them momentum, costing them games. You turn the ball over four times against the Buffalo team that last year was one of the top teams in the entire league. You're not going to win that game at home, on the road, on the moon. It's the defense's fault. Stop just looking at the scoreboard. Like, care a little bit, right? I'm not putting this on everyone, but and you can heap the blame, right? You want to heap the blame on whoever you want, that's your right, right? Landed a free home of the Brave, First Amendment, you could blame anybody. You could blame the punter if you want. But the fact of the matter is, when you're turning the ball over this much, from a guy in Patrick Mahomes, and you got to heap some of it on the MVP, a guy that hasn't had double-digit interceptions since his first year starting, and he had 12, he already has 6 in 5 games. 6 interceptions in 5 games. I don't get it. You know, I don't. You got to put some of it on Pat, or Patrick rather, as I know his mother would prefer he be called. You got to heap some of it on the guy who's the star player. You got to heap some of it on Big Red in the offense. You can't keep turning the ball over. You can't. It's not going to last. You turn the ball over this much, you are going to lose games. You definitely are. Because this Chiefs defense is decent, but they're not good enough. With this many turnovers against this good of competition, we're talking the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chargers, three of the better teams in the AFC, to turn that around, right? They're not going to go, and like I said, they force turnovers. 2 interceptions from Lamar Jackson. That's a game you got to win. You got to win. Giving it away. We didn't really talk about the Buffalo game, but we kind of talked about the Buffalo game. So we'll move on to the other primetime games. Number 5 in the standout 7. Let's talk Colts-Ravens. A lot of praise being heaped on Lamar Jackson in this one, and rightfully so. This was a choke job for the Indianapolis Colts. I don't know who to put the blame on, if I'm being honest with you. You want to blame the defense? Sure, I guess. You want to blame the offense for fading away in the fourth quarter when they're up 22-9? I'll give you that one, too. I see this situation differently than the other one I just talked about. I mean, you can heap some blame on a guy like Carson Wentz, I guess, but when he goes for 402 touchdowns, doesn't throw an interception, it's hard for me, you know? When you give up, and look, it's not the yardage, and I'll get to it in a second why. When you give up 440 yards passing to Lamar Jackson, and he throws 2 less touchdowns than incompletions, what's going on, guys? I mean, and this is with the Ravens receiving core. There were some drops in this game, I believe. So, Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, goes for a 125, 2 touchdowns. Explosive, as usual, when he can catch the ball. Not supposed to be a shot, kind of a shot. Mark Andrews, we've talked about Mark Andrews, you know that. 11 catches, a 147, 2 touchdowns. Massive. Massive performance from Lamar through the air. And, you know, we talked about the comments in the offseason where they said, oh, they'll figure him out. And I said, shenanigans. And the shenanigans holds up. Do I think he's this guy? No, not at all. He is not, you know, throw for 400 yards in a playoff. I don't think he's this guy. I still think he's explosive as a runner, and it definitely helps open things up. I think schematically, they were just better. Schematically, strategically, whichever word you prefer, they were just better than Indianapolis. The battle for Baltimore, the Ravens just came out to play more. And look, why did it take till late in the game? I couldn't tell you. Maybe it was some of those early drops. Maybe it was some conservative play calling by the Colts. But I think what this game also showed me is that Carson Wentz could still play a little bit. This is a Ravens team that, for all intents and purposes, we can assume will be in the playoffs, barring another, you know, significant injury. And realistically, when I say that, I mean Lamar Jackson. This team will be in the playoffs. And, you know, it sucks to lose by six in a game that you were winning. It sucks to, you know, I think they lost the coin toss in overtime and then just didn't get the ball. Sucks to suck. I mean, you're up by double digits entering the fourth. Come on now. You threw this one away. Rough loss for Colts fans everywhere. Let's talk Tampa Bay, Philadelphia. And this will be brief because I did not watch this game. And when I say I did not watch this game, I mean I watched it, but I did not really lock in on it. You know, it's... I just didn't. I didn't really... Didn't really care. I knew Tampa Bay was going to win. I knew Philly is not going anywhere this season. I didn't expect to see a lot out of Jalen Hurts. I didn't. You know, Tom Brady goes for 297, two touchdowns. Okay. Lenny Fournette runs for two touchdowns. Okay. Nice to see O.J. Howard get the rock a little bit. I think O.J. Howard will eventually wind up on another team and wind up a legitimately threatening tight end in their passing game. He just doesn't get burned from here because the team's too stacked. I remember now, as we go back, because that's all I got for you on Bucks-Eagles, sorry. But I remember now, the thing I wanted to talk about in the Indy and Baltimore game. So Harbaugh is taking his timeouts with over 5 minutes to play, down eight, right? And Indy winds up in field goal range with 4.5 minutes left, and the field goal is blocked. I remember this, and it's to make him look like a genius, right? But you would have been down 11 with no timeouts. I get it, you know, you're saving the time. I just don't agree with that call. I don't agree with calling the timeouts that early. I think it's real early, man. It's real early. And then, you know, Lamar Jackson almost fumbles at the 1 yard line again. I think that happened twice in this game. Clock going down below 1 minute. Indy's got two timeouts and just kind of letting it drip. I mean, Wentz gets him to midfield. He looked like Wentz. He looked slower, a little bit less athletic, but he looked like Wentz. Then they wind up with a roughing penalty, you know, and goggles, Rodrigo Blankenship, as I've heard him called, goggles. He just shanks it hard, and then, you know, you turn a win into a loss by missing, by bad special teams plays, bad decision making, things like that. I had forgotten about the missed field goal, I'm not going to lie to you. I was so ready to heap some praise on the Baltimore Ravens, I'd forgotten if he just hits the field goal, they still win the game. Rough week for kickers. That brings me actually directly into... See, that seems like an intentional transition, but I promise you it was not. Let's talk about the kickers in week six. I believe it was week five. Yeah. Number six in the standout seven. Week five of the NFL. What happened? All of a sudden, kickers forgot how to kick. We talked about it with Cincinnati and Green Bay, mentioning the Colts as well. Some other games just missed extra points everywhere. Missed field goals everywhere. What's going on? What is going on? I think it's complete mulligan. It wouldn't shock me if we saw no missed extra points this week. It wouldn't shock me if we saw people hitting from 50-something easily. But what a weird week. I can't remember a week like this. I'm sure it happens every few years where it's just, you know, luck of the draw. The kickers show up to work, and it's not their week. All right. Either way, that had to get in there. And then before we head to the pick'em portion of the episode, my favorite part, your favorite part of the show, we're obligated, first of all, to do news and notes, but second of all, to talk about the John Gruden fiasco. Obviously, what's done is done with John Gruden. The whole thing was a little bizarre, but after everything came out, it's the move that had to be made. Whether it be him resigning or Mark Davis or the general manager telling him that they're moving on from him, the resigning, or the resignation rather, was probably the way to go. There's no face to be saved, so I won't say to save face. Not a successful tenure for Gruden in Vegas, but it is what it is. I will say this, and I know I've said this before, I said at the beginning of the episode, I'll say it again. I never intend for this show to branch out too far off of between the lines talk, right? We're talking trades that need to be made, fine. We're talking players that want out, fine. I'm not here to break down the ins and outs of some of these guys' lives, tell you if they're a good guy or a bad guy, tell you about this political thing, that political thing. And I'm not saying this is a political thing for John Gruden, but I'm just mentioning it. And we're not here to talk about that. So, like I said, I had to touch on it because we talked about Urban Meyer last week, but I'm not going to make this a regular thing that we throw in here at the end of the Standout 7 or at the end of episodes or at the end of whatever, because personally, that's not what I go to, you know, sports talk for. And I would say the sports talk podcast, you know, not radio because we're not live, but that's not what I come here for. And therefore, that's not what I'm trying to put out necessarily for y'all. And if you want more of that, I'm sorry, but there's plenty of places you can get it. And if you don't, if you like it this way, then, well, stick around because we're going to keep it this way. And the final thing I'll say on the Gruden thing is, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, I wouldn't encourage you necessarily to go back and listen to old news, but you can jump back and talk about, or rather listen to me talk about, the Urban Meyer thing and how, in my view, it's kind of bizarre. Urban Meyer had so much criticism heaped upon him for what appeared to be a consensual action between two consenting adults. Granted, Urban is married, but that's between him and his wife. It's a shame it wound up public. It should have been a private matter. I understand. But I brought up that there are people in this league, and people, whether it be on the sidelines, in the front offices, in the owner's boxes, you know, on the field, who have done far worse than Urban Meyer, said far worse, believed far worse, this, that, and the third. And ironically, within a week, we see a relatively big controversy for a relatively well-known NFL coach, right? At one point, he was in a fairly prominent position in the league, both being a Super Bowl champion head coach and being touted by some to be the next John Madden, who never found himself into these controversies, mind you. Just worth saying, right? Just worth putting it out there. I stand by what I said on Urban Meyer, and I think this kind of doesn't vindicate Urban at all. He's still being a bad dude, going around his wife's back and, you know, messing around. But there are bigger fish to fry than a head coach who's chasing tail after a loss. Albeit a married one, as I said. Can't say it enough. Said it last week, I'll say it again. But come on now. Clearly there are bigger fish to fry in the NFL. News and notes before we move on. Zach Ertz dealt to Arizona. I like this trade a lot for the Arizona Cardinals. You get an experienced veteran tight end. If he can stay healthy and stay out there, he can certainly contribute. And I think bolstering that tight end position helps them even more. They're a great team already. Then we have, let's see, Juju Smith-Schuster, done for the season. Unfortunate for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but it appears that it may be a bit of a down year anyway for them. Clyde Edwards-Helaire to IR for Kansas City. We talked about him a little bit. Not going to say it's going to help the team because obviously he's their starting running back, but we'll see what direction they go in trying to replace his production in the backfield. Tua Tagovailoa going to be back this week for the Miami Dolphins. Frank Ragnow of the Detroit Lions, the center, is out for the year. Richard Sherman going to miss a few weeks for Tampa Bay. Run CMC, not going to be back this week. In fact, he's going to hit IR and be out the next 3 weeks. He was practicing. I thought he was going to be on IR, maybe, whatever. But he's going to hit IR now. Also, the Arizona Cardinals going to be without their head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, this weekend, and three other team members after testing positive for COVID-19. It's going to be a huge game for the Cardinals against the Cleveland Browns. It's kind of a shame they're going to be handicapped because of the COVID situation. Moreover, we got one more. Sua Cravens, I believe safety, NFL safety, said, "I can't stand how the league shows so much love to offensive players but treats defenders as henchmen. Xavien Howard had double-digit picks last year. We don't see one commercial or promo. Let an offensive player have 30 catches, 500 yards, 5 touchdowns. Face of Madden." Bizarre take at the end, but I get what he's trying to go for. Look, I mean, the NFL, I don't think, and he would know better than I, is in charge of who is in commercials or promos. It's up to the businesses that they work with. I mean, a team could request, you know, Nate Solder, who's been through a lot, who people know, who was a former Patriot, who's a current New York Giant, two big markets, right? Could request him. You know, he's had a lot of things to deal with off the field in terms of his child having to deal with cancer and battle cancer. He's a guy that could be a face of something, and I'm not saying he's comparable to a defender with 15 sacks like Myles Garrett or, you know, somebody like that, but you could see J.J. Watt in some ads. You could see Richard Sherman. Well, Richard Sherman's marketability kind of went down, obviously, this past offseason, but even before that, some people didn't take kindly to that sideline interview with Aaron Andrews. They thought it was weird. They thought he looked a little abrasive. All right. You know, there's plenty of marketing to go around. Don't blame the league. Look, I don't know this to be certain. If he knows this to be certain, and I don't, correct me, by all means, I'll apologize for being wrong here. Speaking out of turn, perhaps. But as far as I know, the business gets a say in who their front person is. You know, it's, you take a look at the Subway's commercials, it's Stephen Curry, Tom Brady, Serena Williams. We're not talking, you know, I'm trying to think of a comp here. We're not seeing necessarily a guy like, oh, we got to get Taj Gibson in our Toyota commercial. You know? They're not looking at the New York Yankees and saying, oh, no, we don't want Judge. We don't want, let's get Kyle Higashioka, the backup catcher. You know, he might be the best defensive catcher in terms of helping the pitching staff on the team. That doesn't matter to anyone. They're not going to put Nestor Cortez in a commercial. You know, they're going to put Gerrit Cole. They're going to put the big price tag. They're going to put the people who people know. And it's already forced to try and push through a barrier in the NFL because of the helmet. It hides your face. If your face is hidden, it is hard for someone to kind of put two and two together. You know what I mean? Look, it's easier nowadays with social media and things like that, but that's still true. NBA players, you see their face all the time. Baseball players see their face all the time, unless they're playing catcher, right? If they're hitting, you see their face. In the dugout, you see their face. I think the reason you get more offensive guys, first of all, it's more flashy, right? Because big hits have kind of been legislated away in terms of in-player safety. I think we used to see James Harrison in some ads. We might still see James Harrison in some ads. Maybe Vince Wilfork would be good for a nice, you know, Wrangler jeans ad. I remember him in his overalls. But sorry, Sua. It's unfortunate, but I think you might be pointing the wrong direction. That brings us to the end of the Standout 7 of this week's episode. We're going to get into the pick'em portion. My favorite part, your favorite part. We enter this week off of another 11-5. Three consecutive 11-5s. We're rolling through the early part of the season. We're 1-0 this week, and our win streak of Thursday night football games continues, obviously. So the first game we're going to be talking about this week is the Battle for Florida, not taking place in Florida, 9:30 a.m. tomorrow. The Dolphins take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Dolphins going to be without Xavien Howard on the defensive side and Devontae Parker on the offensive side. Questionable, some names you might know here. Tight end Adam Shaheen with a knee, wide receiver Preston Williams with a groin, Byron Jones in the defensive backfield with an Achilles in a groin, and Jacoby Brissett, also questionable. Jaguars going to be without Miles Jack on the defensive side. Questionable. Two more on the defensive side. Tyson Campbell in the defensive backfield with a toe, and Roy Robertson-Harris on the D-line with an ankle. Honestly, we've seen some weird things happen in London football games. Part of me wants to take the Jaguars, but I will give the benefit of the doubt to the Dolphins. They were a pretty decent team last year. Their starting quarterback is back. Let's see if they can get back to try and keep it a relevant season. Go to 2-4. Give me Miami to win this one. I mean, I get on the neutral site, I guess I'll say. They're on the road, but it's in London. The first stateside kickoff tomorrow is a 1 p.m. matchup between the Minnesota Vikings and the Carolina Panthers. This one's going to be tricky. As I mentioned, the Panthers without Christian McCaffrey, without linebackers Shaq Thompson and Kamal Martin as well. The Vikings going to be missing tight end Ben Ellefson with a knee and D-tackle Michael Pierce with an elbow. I'm going to take the Vikings in this one. Look, we talked about the Panthers before and the steps forward for Sam Darnold, and this is a game that is truly a 50-50 game. I think Kirk Cousins is an above-average NFL quarterback. Sam Darnold, when he was a Jet, was below average. But this is a game that if Sam Darnold's going to be that guy, he's going to be a pretty good QB in this league. You know, we're talking Kirk Cousins-ish. We're talking Carson Palmer-ish. You know, I don't think Carson Palmer was ever the best quarterback in the league, but he was good, and when he was at his best, he was pushing on great, right? So if Sam Darnold's going to get that way, this is a game he could win. It's a game at home. Missing his star running backs is going to be a little bit more on his shoulders, but I don't know. I think it's winnable for Carolina. I'll take Minnesota, one of those see it when I believe it sort of things, to quote, you know, Patrick Mahomes. But we saw how it worked out for him, so I fully expect Carolina to make me look foolish here, but give me Captain Kirk on the road. Next, two AFC contenders face off in Baltimore when the LA Chargers head there to take on the Ravens. I'm very excited for this game. The Chargers are going to be without linebacker Drew Tranquil with a chest injury. Questionable. The man we just talked about ad nauseum, wide receiver Mike Williams with a knee, and also safety Nazir Adderley with a hip. Ravens going to be without Sammy Watkins with a thigh, and tackle Ronnie Stanley with an ankle. Questionable. One more on the O-line, Alejandro Villanueva, the former Steeler, with a knee, and two safeties, Deshaun Elliott with a quad, and Geno Stone with a thigh. So I talked about last week how I thought the Chargers had it in them to take down a team like Cleveland, even though the week before I had talked about how, you know, I didn't necessarily think they could take down Kansas City. Well, they've taken down Kansas City. They've taken down Cleveland. And honestly, I am going to take them, after a hard-fought win for Baltimore, to catch Baltimore, you know, in a little bit of a hangover after some big wins. And look, I could be completely wrong. I think this might be another shootout. But I'm going to take the Chargers to win this one on the road. Next, we got a game that you know, most people probably won't be interested in unless you're doing daily fantasy or maybe some gambling. The LA Rams come across the country to take on the New York Football Giants in New Jersey. The Rams listing no one on the injury report. You don't see that too often. The Giants going to be without Saquon Barkley with an ankle, Kenny Golladay with a knee, and a hope to win. Darius Slayton questionable with a hammy. Tony, breakout performance last week, Kadarius Tony, he's questionable with an ankle. Two on the O-line, Ben Bredesen with a hand and Andrew Thomas with a foot. That's a left tackle injury as well. Danny Dimes has made it through the concussion protocol, I believe, and will be going in this one. I don't really think it will matter. They're going to be throwing the ball a lot, I think, in this one, because they're going to fall behind. Could see a big performance out of Danny Dimes here if he's truly healthy and ready to go. Intrigued to see that. Might be a sleeper for DFS if anybody's playing that. FanDuel, DraftKings, whatever. Give me the Rams to win this one on the road. I've wasted too much time on this game already. Next, a battle of two AFC South towards the bottom teams as we sit, as the Houston Texans head to Indy to take on the Colts. Texans going to be without Laremy Tunsil with a thumb and Deshaun Watson for obvious reasons. The Colts going to be without their kicker, who has a right hip injury, which would make sense why he missed that kick at the tail end of regulation last week. Also going to be without Andrew Sendejo at safety with a concussion, Braden Smith with a foot injury on the O-line, Kimoko Touré at D-end with a groin, great name by the way, and running back Jordan Wilkins. Either way, I'm taking the Colts to win this one. I think it's possible, and this might be an overstep, it's possible that in that loss last week, throwing for 400 yards, Carson Wentz, something might have clicked. Something might have clicked. You know, I'm not saying they're still going to bounce back and be a playoff team, but with an extra game in the regular season, you got more time. I think something clicked, and I think this Texans game will be interesting, because if Davis Mills throws for 303 touchdowns again, man, the Texans fans really stepped in something here, and they might have got a little lucky. Next, the Kansas City Chiefs head to Washington, D.C. to take on the Footballers. The Chiefs are going to be without Charvarius Ward in the defensive backfield for this one, Chris Jones on the D-line with a wrist, and Blake Bell at tight end with a back. Big ones questionable, however. Joe Tooney on the offensive line with a hand, Tyreek Hill with a quad, and Anthony Hitchens at linebacker with a knee. Couple of players out here for Washington on the offensive side. On the O-line, Brandon Scherff with a knee, Samuel Cosmi with an ankle, and a wide receiver, Curtis Samuel and Cam Sims, both going to miss this one, which is notable because Terry McLaurin and De'Ami Brown are questionable for this one, along with Antonio Gibson in the backfield and Sammy's Reyes. I'll go with Sammy. The Chiefs win this game. The Chiefs are just better than Washington. I don't think they're going to slide here. I think eventually the turnovers are going to stop. It might not be this week, but I don't think turnovers will hurt them too much, unless they turn over like five times, in which case all bets are off for this Chiefs team this year. Next, we got an NFC North battle from, I believe it's still called Soldier Field in Chicago, as the Green Bay Packers head up there? To take on the Bears. Sorry about that intro. Up there? Geography's not my strong suit. Packers going to be without Kevin King in the defensive secondary. Doubtful for them, Dennis Kelly on the O-line with a back, and questionable, Elgton Jenkins at guard with an ankle. The Bears going to be without tight end J.P. Holtz with a quad, and D-tackle Caleb Johnson with a knee. And get your notepad out, because there's a lot of players listed as questionable once again for the Bears. Akeem Hicks with a groin, Khalil Mack with a foot, A-Rob Allen Robinson with an ankle, Xavier Crawford at corner with a back, Duke Shelley at corner with an ankle, Jakeem Grant at wideout with a groin, Artie Burns at DB with a foot, and Eddie Jackson with a knee. That is a lot of starting defensive players for a team that is facing the Green Bay Packers. I don't think Justin Fields has as much luck this week. I'm not certain he's going to be going this week. But either way, I'm going to take the Packers to win this one on the road. Next, two teams that we talked about a little bit earlier, but one on the good side, one on the bad side, as the Battle of the Big Cats takes place at Ford Field when the Cincinnati Bengals head up to Detroit to take on the Lions. Of course, I'm referencing the fact that we gave a big W to Burrow, and we talked about the Vikings beating Detroit at the buzzer. Lions, nobody listens out, however, a couple questionable on the defensive side, Trey Flowers, back on the offensive side, TJ Hockenson at tight end, and both running backs, DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams. The Bengals going to be without Deontay Smith on the O-line, and questionable, Jackson Carman on that O-line, Mike Thomas, no not that Mike Thomas, at receiver, and Joe Mixon with an ankle at running back. I'm taking the Bengals to win this one in our final 1 o'clock kick. I think they should win this one pretty easily. This team's kind of pushing the tempo in terms of the rebuild, and I think that's interesting to see, and I think this is one, if they're going to try and contend, that they have to win, and I think they could win convincingly. Next, our only 4:05 kick could be one of the biggest games of the week, but then again, this is a spicy week, as the Arizona Cardinals head to Cleveland to take on the Browns. Cardinals going to be without Rodney Hudson on the O-line with a rib and shoulder injury. Additionally, we mentioned they're going to be without their head coach. They're also going to be without, potentially, listed as questionable, Jordan Hicks at linebacker with a toe, Byron Murphy with a rib injury, and Marco Wilson with a rib injury, both at corner, Kelvin Beachum, the tackle, with a rib injury as well. A lot of rib injuries for the squad, and Chase Edmonds with a shoulder. Big one here for the Browns. Malcolm Smith, former Super Bowl MVP, not going to play with an abdominal injury, as well as Nick Chubb with a calf injury, their lead back. They still got Kareem Hunt, but it's going to be big without Chubb in a game this big. A whole bunch of people listed as questionable, so get out your notepad once again. We'll start on the defensive side. Jadeveon Clowney on the D-line with an elbow and a knee. Myles Garrett with a knee and an ankle. Tack McKinley with an ankle and a knee. In the secondary, Denzel Ward with a neck and Greg Newsome the second with a calf, as well as A.J. Green. No, not that A.J. Green. With a shoulder and a knee. On the O-line as well, Jack Conklin with a knee. Jedrick Wills with an ankle. And Kareem Hunt with a knee. A lot of injuries, potentially, for Cleveland. Even if we were playing full health here, I'd probably still take the Cardinals. I'm that bullish on this Cardinal team, and it's not because of the run. It's because they were my Super Bowl team, if you remember, and I will pound my chest until they are eliminated, if they are eliminated. So give me the Cardinals to win this one, head coachless on the road. Next, our first of two 4:25 kicks. It's a battle of what a lot of people would consider to be America's teams, as the Dallas Cowboys head to New England to take on the Patriots. In this one, Patriots going to be without Shaq Mason on the O-line and Sean Wade in the secondary with a concussion. Questionable, their kicker, Nick Folk, still battling that knee injury. Jonathan Jones with an ankle at corner, as well as Jalen Mills at corner with a hammy. Two running backs as well, Damian Harris with a rib injury and J.J. Taylor with a groin. Cowboys going to be without D.N. Dorrance Armstrong with an ankle. Questionable, some big names on here. Start on the defensive side of the ball with Trayvon Diggs, who's playing his heart out to start this season with an ankle. Randy Gregory on the D-line with a knee. Donovan Wilson as well with a groin at safety. On the offensive side, Zeke Elliott with a rib injury and Tyron Smith with a neck. Big names on the injury report aside, I think this Dallas team is comfortably better than this Patriots squad, so I think they're going to bring this one home and continue to build that lead in the NFC East at Foxborough. Next at 4:25, we have a game that was kind of interesting a couple of weeks ago when we looked at it. Now it's a little weird between the 3-2 Raiders and the 3-2 Broncos at Mile High. Well, this game is weird because both teams have kind of fallen off the pedestals they built themselves at the start of the season. As far as the injuries go, relatively tame. The Broncos going to be without DB Mike Ford. Questionable, two big ones, Kareem Jackson at safety with a back, and Melvin Gordon in the backfield with a hip. The Raiders, two defensive linemen, doubtful. D-tackle, former New York Giant Jonathan Hankins with a hip, and questionable, D-tackle Quentin Jefferson with a back. I think the Raiders are the better team. I'm going to take the Raiders, but with an interim head coach and a lot of turmoil surrounding the team, I don't really know which way to go. So it would not shock me if the Broncos were able to bring this one home at home. The Sunday night football game, another one that sounded better when we started the season, as the Seattle Seahawks, led by Geno Smith, head to Pittsburgh and Heinz Field to take on the Steelers. Steelers, as we said, without Juju Smith-Schuster for the rest of the season with that shoulder injury, and D-tackle Carlos Davis with a knee. Seahawks going to be without Russell Wilson, Chris Carson, as well as Cedric Ogbui on the O-line. Pittsburgh has to win this game. I think Seattle's season without Russell Wilson is kind of lost, but Pittsburgh still kind of in it, so if they want to make a playoff run, you got to win games like this. Give me Pittsburgh to win this one at home. Next, we've got a rematch of the Music City Miracle, I believe, as the Buffalo Bills head to Tennessee to take on the Titans. And I was high on the Titans to start this year. I said the Bills might have some regression. Well, we're checking in week 6, and it appears I have gone the wrong direction in this two-piece. The Titans sit at 3-2, which is not bad, but Buffalo is 4-1, and they're coming in with victories over the Kansas City Chiefs, dominant win over the Texans, dominant win over the Dolphins, 40-burger on Washington, the only game they lost, some special team stuff involved in losing to Pittsburgh. I think Buffalo has a pretty good shot, and I think they're going to win this one on the road on Monday night. That leaves us with one game left, our Week 7 Thursday night football game. You know we had to get it in there. The Denver Broncos head to Cleveland to take on the Cleveland Browns. My usual things apply, where I'm kind of picking off of momentum that doesn't exist yet. I think the Browns are going to have a hard-fought one with the Cardinals, win or loss, but I think Denver is going to walk into a motivated Cleveland squad on Thursday night, and Cleveland is going to walk away with a W. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of the pick'em portion of this week's episode, and that brings us to the end of episode number 116 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I usually say join us next Saturday afternoon, and I believe that that is still going to be the case this week. As I said, we're going to have some schedule flux, but I think we'll be able to make it next Saturday afternoon, episode 117. If it was your first time here, or if you've been here 100 more times, thank you for joining us. And as always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.